So they arranged for me to do a manhunt exercise. And the goal is to find where they live and break into their home. And so I flew out to a city in Romania that I won't name, but I showed up there with nothing other than just some tools. And I was like, all right, let's find this guy.
It starts with just taking that leap.
Man, you have to work hard. You have to be incredibly smart.
Choose something that even if it fails, you are going to be proud of it.
Doesn't matter how badly you got beaten down.
Be kind, be kind, be kind.
Become a better person, a better leader, the better business.
Go with your gut.
I'm Samuel Donner, and this is Finding Founders.
Alec is a hacker, but he's not just hacking computers. He also hacks a human body. From his early explorations into biohacking and biology, Alec became one of the founders of Biohack ATX Club and eventually took part in the mini circle gene therapy. With a journey marked by curiosity and experimentation, we discuss what brought Alec into the biohacking world and Tor Kuya, a sanctuary where science meets the soul.
Okay. So, Alec, where are we right now?
Right now, we're at the great, amazing 10th Planet Austin out here in Austin, Texas. Austin, Texas is home to essentially the grappling capital of the world now. We have New Wave, which is kind of your elite star-level grapplers that everybody in the world knows. Same with B-Team. B-Team is also a premier school. They are known as the second best school in the world, quite
when
literally.
When did you get into it?
When did I get into jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
2017.
Okay, so you've been doing it. Like, have you been doing it at this, like,
this
frequency?
Yeah, this has been my exclusive gym.
Huge, mm-hmm. Huge. And, like, when did you start experimenting with, like, different kind of, I guess, therapies and, like, biohacking stuff?
Maybe the first time ever, I was probably a year and a half, 2 years into jiu-jitsu, and I was kind of phased by the some of the waves of injury that comes in grappling. There's some obstacles to get over. So I first started realizing, I was like, man, I'm not feeling great. And at the time I was really just overtraining.
Yeah.
But
like, were you getting like sprains and such, or like dislocating?
I had, by that point, I had already had a couple of my ribs dislocated.
Had dislocate your ribs?
Oh yeah.
How?
It's like, very common.
If
someone's just putting a lot of pressure on your torso and there's a lot of torsion while that pressure is there, I mean, the rib just dislocates out of the, what do they call that?
Rib cage?
Yeah, the rib cage, but there's just the intercostal muscles.
Yeah.
So either in the front of the ribs or in the chops, they can, that happens. But I was just experiencing a lot of pain, a lot of injury. It wasn't really healing right. So I experimented with like a SARM.
What's a SARM?
A SARM is a selective androgen receptor modulator. So it's basically a more targeted androgen, which the goal of it is to grow skeletal muscle and kind of avoid things like your prostate or your heart. Even though there's androgen receptors in there, the selectivity of the drug focuses on skeletal muscle. So that's the claim of it.
So you said it was well known this kind of thing would work?
Yeah, definitely. There's quite a few people that that have done SARMs in the past, and there's a little bit of literature on their effectiveness.
And so was that like the moment you were like, oh shit, like I'm kind of like interested in this whole world of like biohacking and experimenting on myself?
No, I was into biohacking before that.
What was like the first thing that you were?
It was pre-athletics.
Yeah.
I was just, from a young age, I was always into like HIV. There was just a big scare around it. So when I was like 15, I started to look into biology. And then by the time I got out of the house, I was maybe 21, 22 when I met Mac. And I had a buddy, Sean, as my roommate, and we started a club with Mac called Biohack ATX and a Bitcoin club. So there was just cool overlap in the biotech space.
So you were getting interested in, like, and initially it was like HIV, and that got you into biology, and then you started this club with Mac. How did you start experimenting on yourself?
The first time it was Mac had a night vision eye drop.
A night vision eye drop?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Basically, the goal of this little thing was to, you put it in your eyes and it would it would help you see at night. It would, you know, dilate your pupils in a way.
You would drop it in your eyes, what would it do?
Yeah, you'd put it in your eyes and you'd wait a little bit and then you'd go out into the dark and like a Wolverine and just try to see what you could see out there.
What was in the drops?
I believe it was some type of, it's a specific type of solvent. It's like a organic solvent.
Does it come from like deep sea fish or something?
Something like ocean, I think. I can't remember. Yeah. But DMSO and some insulin-like growth factor or something. We did that. And then
Why do you feel like you had such a high risk tolerance?
I think I don't really have that high of a risk tolerance. I would think it was more just kind of a willingness to trust others. And, Mac and other folks that I'd met had a lot of overlap in opinions that had been unconventional for the era and like the time.
Right.
But I knew to be like very grounded in what I would think is a sense of truth. And that guided me towards that trust. Yeah. I do think I had some risk-taking behavior. I think it just might be like me being an idiot and just being young, honestly.
Yeah.
So I could have gone horribly wrong, but thankfully it didn't.
But it didn't. Yeah, and were you able to see in the dark a bit better?
It was like marginal. Yeah. I don't know if it was like anything crazy. It's not like what you would imagine it to be. But it was this black liquid and it was really cool looking. And you did get a good bit of... like the threshold where it matters to have night vision. Like if you can't see anything, you could see something. But it wasn't like what you might think where it's like, I just put these in and then now I can see like I'm, in light. It's not like that.
So after that, like how did you plunge even further into it? Was that just like validating that, okay, you can experiment with these things. You can put it, these strange fish drops in your eyes. And it's gonna make you see in the dark. And it kind of worked, and so it's like, okay, what else can I do to my body that?
I think it was like the first thing that I could do myself, and I found a deep sense of novelty in being able to do things for myself and do things that hadn't been known about.
Yeah.
So around that time, there was the explosion of like CRISPR, where that started to become really well known. And Mac and Walter, they were, doing CRISPR experiments in their lab and showing us how to do them and,
Their lab? Like, what was their lab?
Yeah, they had a little wet lab at this place called ProPhase Bio Studios, which was a 501c3. And that whole community of guys experimenting with different ways to either make a new therapy or extract capital in like an interesting way.
Yeah.
That was very big inspiration to me. And that wet lab that they had was in the same space as this ATX hacker space, which was kind of more my alignment of like computer right. hacking. So I had inspiration to like try to get a hold of my school's computer systems and, beat tests and stuff like that. So that's
about
it.
We were talking the other day about like you finding out how to reverse the Scantron to make a key that gets you like 100%.
Yeah, I just noticed one day, I was like, they use the same Scantrons that we do. And I was always going in during lunch hours and I would literally like credit card Jimmy open the door to get the Scantron so I wouldn't have to take these tests. And after stealing enough of these Scantrons, I just saw that there were these bubbles that they would fill in at the top of them. And that's when I learned, there's a specific code. So I would sneak into that Scantron machine room and I would like look at the specs on it. And I was like, this is how you make a key.
Huh.
And whenever I would turn in my test, I would just fill in the right bubbles and it would just come out as a key. So getting a sense of that power over like systems from a young age very much motivated me.
Yeah. And so then it's like, okay, you can do it with a Scantron machine. You can do it with maybe some computers.
Yeah.
How about your own body?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we kind of went through the fish drop eye stuff. We went through some of like the wet lab stuff. When do you even like step it up more?
That really kicked off with Mac and Walter when they started looking deeper into plasmids and they were telling me about the concept of plasmid engineering And I roughly understood the role of a plasmid, and I understood like the basics of like cell walls and membranes. So when they explained to me this idea of it being like a book on the shelf that the cell can like just transcribe from, I was like, huh. And I was still too afraid to do anything with like manipulating my genetics because
at
the time.
Why were you afraid?
Well, because my understanding, my model of gene therapies was more of like what the average person might think when they talk about editing their genome. You kind of think about replication of that DNA throughout your body,
yeah,
in a way that is uncontrolled or like exponential or logarithmic, where you can see it's like just this explosive curve and you can't really control that.
Yeah.
So I didn't like that. And it wasn't until later that I learned that the delivery here of the plasmid doesn't really allow it to escape much in theory. So it's not, and it has no mechanism for it to just continuously replicate in like a viral fashion. So when I understood that was not
the case.
Because
that's basically like the key difference between the mini circle and the viral injection of like gene therapies. It's that the mini circle has less chance of just replicating in some of the bad ways that could like.
Yeah, it's not gonna. And it also doesn't like fully incorporate into chromosomal DNA there and then replicate.
So at what point were you like, this is something that I want to.
To be honest, I waited like 4 or 5 years. I told them, I was like, hey, look, if you guys are still alive and healthy in like 4 or 5 years time.
Because Mac had already injected himself.
He did, but it wasn't until I saw it with Walter that I even gave a damn. Because before that I was like, yeah, I mean, you guys have this idea, maybe it'll work, but probably not. And then like 3 months later, I seen Walter come back from Appalachia. And he was, I mean, and this is a guy that I kind of just look at as like a complete like white paper nerd, you know, wizard, hilarious one, but like was just in the books, thin as a rail.
Yeah.
And when he came back and I saw him 3 months later and his back was straight, he had this like kind of barrel chest going on and he gave me this massive bear hug and the guy just looked taller. And at the time he was 23, so you know, I think like mostly grown.
Yeah.
And I was just amazed at that. I knew there was absolutely zero explanation because other than their therapy, because he was not the type to do just uncontrolled drugs. He wouldn't just take steroids or anything. So when I saw that, that's when I was like, okay, this works. And if y'all don't die in 4 or 5 years, let me know. I'll try it out. And 4 or 5 years later rolled by. And they were both fine and both bigger, noticeably. And that's when I was like, okay, this seems like this could work. And tried it out and it worked.
What was the state of your body before you were thinking about injecting yourself with this gene therapy?
I was a bit thinner. I was quite a bit thinner. And I'll give you guys some photos of kind of like what I looked like before then. And I had a big injury at the time that I was, you know, really helpful for something to help me out with.
Yeah. And what was the injury?
I had all three of my ligaments and torn here. Yeah. So like this one, and this one right here, they just completely ripped, like grade 3 tears.
Yeah.
And that was pretty horrible. I couldn't really walk well, and I was also probably bordering on overtraining still. So I wasn't really healing the right way. And at that time I was like kind of a little bit more desperate to find something because grappling is a big passion for me. As soon as I did the therapy, within a couple of weeks, I really felt something in my mind. I felt like cognitively different. And by around like 90 days, it was
cognitively differently in what way?
I was probably a bit more aggressive, a bit hungrier, a bit more sexual too.
Aggression, getting mad more.
Not like necessarily getting mad. Like it wasn't in my day to day life that I was angry. It was more just like once I turned on the switch of like, hey, you know, my fire there was on, and so I felt that a bit more than the average days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, how did it change like how you started grappling? How did it affect your ankle injury?
The ankle injury, I don't think that like it really had a substantial effect on it, other than the fact that I felt a bit more motivated and a bit more muscular to build up around the ankle. I don't necessarily think that the ankle itself was improved by that particular therapy. There's a chance that it was, because it is rather healed now. But I mean, I had an extended problem with that, and you can't just like get around that. When you really tear ligaments up, they're pretty fucked up. So the mode of that therapy, I don't know how much affected it, but I felt way stronger, and I got a lot bigger.
And how much weight did you put on?
I put on around 15 pounds total. You know, probably a good. And here's the interesting part.
And how much did you weigh before?
How much should I weigh? I can't remember the exact numbers. I have to reflect on the DEXA scans. But I remember the scans reflected I gained in like 3 months 6.2 pounds of dry muscle, which is unheard of for me because I did not change literally anything. Yeah. I was one of the people in the study that I decided like I wanted to know for myself whether or not the things that, and I was considering investing, I was like, I want to know that this works in the worst case scenario where I'm not changing a damn thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't eat any more food. I didn't work out anymore. I didn't do any weightlifting. I just stuck with my grappling regimen. And to put on 6 pounds of dry muscle doing that is pretty much unheard of in 3 months, unless you're lifting aggressively and eating a lot. So, and then I put on probably another 7 pounds of fat, 7 or 8 pounds of fat. And that whole dynamic was just so interesting to me how that happened. So I would get comments where, because I didn't tell everybody. I told a couple people, my roommates, and that was it. And it kind of kept it quiet until a couple months in. And I remember people coming up to me and people approached my girlfriend as well, asking like, hey, what's Alec on? You know, I know he's on something. What's he doing? And eventually it just came to be known that I was like, yeah, I was this GMO now. So that's how it affected me. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
And so now, like, how many months has it been since you've been injected?
It's been about a year and 4 months or so.
And so are the effects still as strong as...
They're not as strong at the peak, but I will say that I am still carrying extra muscle. Like I can definitely tell that my mass is like the mass of my muscle is just much bigger. Mm. I it's kind of stark when you look at, you know, the photos of me beforehand.
Yeah.
Or it's just like, damn, like, cause I was already a full grown man at that point where, you know, I'm like 26, 27. You're about done growing there.
Yeah.
28, 29, you're about done growing. I'm 30, so I did the therapy at 29, and I'm still significantly bigger than then, so it has to be working.
So what are the reasons that, like, you shouldn't do it?
Shouldn't do it. You know, I think that there's probably a variety of reasons why you shouldn't mess with your genome. I think that certain folks, maybe if you have a cancer inside of you and you have something that's kind of like stimulating growth, I think that's a big reason to really be cautious about anything that's, you know, growing your cells in any way. I think if you have potentially, it depends on the organism. And I think certain people have more myostatin than others. And I think that can change a lot of the dynamics there. But my only like study-based thing against maybe messing around with your full statin would be related to ligaments and scleraxin, to where I think, and I'm gonna butcher this, but I think like the fibroblasts inside of your body, they'll expand. And I think some of the tensile strength you get inside of a ligament is based on having those strands like really tightly wound. And I think if they expand a bit, it can maybe reduce the amount of load that they can bear.
How about reproductive health?
Reproductive health, I think if you're a female, you might have some more concerns there. you know, with follistatin, as far as like the follicles, yeah. In your ovum, I think it's called your ovum. Yeah. I can't remember how it's called. But for males, I mean, I haven't been trying to get anybody pregnant, but I think I felt fairly healthy there. No noticeable like concerning stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't do any kind of sperm labs or anything like that.
I did hear that like some people recommend banking sperm beforehand, just while you're on it for the 2 year period.
I could do that.
Yeah.
I don't have any data on it, and I've not heard any like concerning data with any other animals as far as that goes. But that is interesting.
Yeah.
Having learned more about what sparked Alex's interest into biohacking, we took a trip to where he gets some of his therapies done.
Yeah, so this is kind of unfortunate. Here's 10th Planet Austin. There's quite a long trek to get to my other favorite place, which is Kuya. It's almost like 300 feet away, right over here. This is our sauna cold plunge spot.
Yeah.
And right next door is the progenitor of all of this, which is Onnit Gym. Mm. And we just hit this circuit constantly, going in and out of each of these buildings. And it is the greatest thing ever. Yeah, sure.
And like, what's in that? What's in Kuya? Because it seems like they have like a bunch of different stuff that you can do there.
Wow. So Kuya is it's a one-stop shop for any biohacker, really. We've got sauna, cold plunge. We've got floats. We've got some ketamine therapy in there, some psychotherapy, a lot of contrasting therapies there, and high-quality supplements. You get some cool celebrities in there.
Alex
lives here. Can we get a room, please?
Absolutely beautiful spot. Here's Kuya.
So we're coming upstairs to Kuya, and we're gonna show you guys some of the awesome rooms and environments and spaces.
Have you been in every room?
Yes, been in every room up here. This is where a lot of the work gets done, a lot of the thought leadership gets done up here, and how we're gonna change the world with contrast therapies and promoting the new wave of therapeutic benefits and drugs to people. So this is a group room. This is where we might have like a group ketamine therapy setting.
Wow.
So your therapist will chill in here.
Can you demonstrate someone doing ketamine therapy?
Yeah, sure. Here you go. No, you know, I haven't actually done the therapy here. I've used ketamine in the past. I'm a fairly like toe deep drug user. I like to do them all, but I don't like to do too much of them. So I haven't had the like visionary ketamine experience yet.
Haven't found yourself in a K-hole yet.
No. We'll also do some group trainings up here, some really interesting stuff. There's a lot of newer, I don't know how you describe it, like personality tests and genetic like personality stuff that we're experimenting with in there. This is the Opus bed. So this bed is actually just composed of speakers, right?
What?
These are all speakers, yes. And you lay down in here, and
Can you show me?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, if one of you guys want to get down on it.
Yeah, I want to get down. Yeah.
Go right ahead, yeah. And each room here in Kuya is supposed to mimic some aspect of Earth's elemental experience. So this is the Space Cosmos room.
Okay.
So you would get down on the Opus bed, and we'll select you a song of some type which specifically corresponds to the bed.
Okay.
And then we dim the lights, get real funky in here.
Oh, man. Oh, whoa. Okay.
Wild, though, right?
Yeah, so nuts.
So we also have a couple other rooms that are really interesting. A lot of the themes. This is the lava room. Fire room. Yeah, it's where people come in and get some massages and stretch work. It's a very enjoyable place to get a nice massage from Aishel, one of our premier masseuses here. We have the forest room. This is a nice little study for a couple people. One or two people will get some integrative work in here.
And this is also like a ketamine room as well.
Yeah, you know, this is like a multi-purpose room. You know, you can go.
I guess any room can be a ketamine room.
That's right. That's
if
right.
You have ketamine in a room.
You can work here. We have the water room, another kind of like masseuse focused area. It's very nice in here. I love this spot. Super chill. And probably my favorite room over here is the wind room.
What's this?
Hey, this is like a massage and lymphatic drainage system that helps kind of move lymph around your body.
How does this work?
Well, it wraps around you and it squeezes you in a specific way with the right type of pressure that'll help move lymph through your body so that you're having some good drainage of that waste system. And it also functions as a massage room. So, people can come in here and just relax. Nice little wind environment.
Wow.
And then I can take you over to our last room. I think we call this the mountain room.
That's...
And it is.
Ooh.
It's very nice. It's a little beanbag vibe in here. Come in and relax. Chit chat. Get your ketamine therapy here.
Same couches, just like different colors.
Oh, this is great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very lovely place.
Yeah.
Get some nice crystals here.
I'm ready for my kid.
You can penetrate your brain with the crystal frequency or something.
Yeah.
Massive shout out to Kuya. This place has been seriously transformative for me. Yeah. My girlfriend.
Why is that? Like, are you involved in all of the therapies that they?
You know, I'm not involved in the therapies. I do just have a personal relationship with the place because I've been here a while. I also do help run the networks here. I have my business does a contract with them, so I help out with their IT stuff. But aside from that, it's just a very, very awesome place to come to, especially considering it's so close to the gym. There's a lot of good.
Got everything you need.
Yes, a good healing work here. Very kind-hearted people that work here as well, doing good work. So come to Kuya. Check it. Come check us out.
After exploring what Kuya has to offer, I wanted to take the conversation back to Alex's interest in biohacking.
What was the last interesting like hack that you had to do?
If I had to select one of the more exciting exercises that I've done, it has to be one that came through a mutual friend of Mac. And I'll redact a lot of the names here.
The names, places.
Basically a guy I only know through a chat room, and I only knew him by a handle. And my mutual friend, Mac, knew this guy personally. I did not, but I knew the handle, and both parties knew I was doing security testing and going out on my own with Glitch Digger, and so they arranged for me to do a manhunt exercise essentially in Romania. So I don't know who it is that I'm looking for. I don't know their name.
And is this just an exercise?
This is an exercise, but it's also a realistic exercise where you're actually going through all the emotions that a real attacker might go through in a constrained amount of time, and then you analyze that from the perspective of, like, you know, a low level attacker, like a total noob, or your high level adversary, and you say, with unlimited time, here's what a real high level guy would do. And that's my job, is to go in there and kind of simulate all of that. And in this case, the story goes that a man approaches me online and says, hey, let's do this. I don't know this person's name. I don't know where they live. And the goal is to find where they live and break into their home where they have, you know, specific things they want tested. And this happened. So I flew out to a city in Romania that I won't name, but I showed up there with nothing other than just some tools, and I was like, all right, let's find this guy. And through a series of like dirty tricks and cheating, I was able to discover this guy's location, And I'll go into a part of this where, so basically the first area of the test is me basically finding my reins in Romania. I'm in a foreign place. They don't speak English. I'm kind of doing a lot of open source intelligence gathering through the means of like typical registries, like the European land registry. And to be honest, they're fairly terse. They have a fairly terse disposition in Romania. They're not like mean people or anything, but when you interact with other folks, they don't have the same kind of openness that most Americans do.
Right.
Where there's got to be a reason you're speaking to me right now. And that sense of like transactional exchange is just overt. So unless you have a reason to be talking to somebody, you're not really going to get a lot of information elicited from them, which is typical in America and typical of the exercise. So going around trying to ask people like, hey, where does this type of guy hang out? They're just like, what the fuck are you talking to me for? You know? But that was the exercise, and it was a very, very fun and grueling exercise because I basically failed for a long time. And not only did I fail for a long time, and the way I'm going to categorize this failure is in a system of bounties, because there's different time points where it's like, hey, can you get me in a certain amount of time? You know, because the client only wants to pay for a certain bit of your hours. And we were at the bare end of the bounty point. And I actually went up and used an ATM in Romania. And I won't say the bank, but it's got the bank's name on the ATM. I go up, I put my card in, and I'm like, oh, I'll take out $500 worth. But I see the exchange rate, and I'm like, 15%. I'm not paying 15%. So I don't get any money out. And I don't get any money out. And yet, the next day, my bank says I had withdrawn $500, and I knew I didn't. So I was amazed at how this happened, because I checked this thing, like I fully checked for like skimmers. There's nothing there. And so I go back the next day to the ATM, and I inspect it deeper. And in fact, there is a proprietary, like not a like little hunky, like shitty skimmer, but like a built-in camera pointed at the pin pad.
Wow.
Yeah, and I went inside the bank, and I was like, look, I don't care. I want my money back. And they started laughing with me, and they were like, oh, don't worry, insurance, it's okay, you're gonna get your money. And I was like, all right, whatever. I called my bank, and they were like, yeah, our insurance paid for it. So I was like, all right, I don't know how this works, but I got my money back. I'm happy, I guess, but I was kind of concerned the fact that other people might get scammed, not realizing that this is mainly a foreigner scam. And as I'm kind of making a stink outside of that ATM, I'm like, whatever, I leave. 30 minutes later, the target sends a photo of me standing outside the ATM to myself. So I'm now being beaten at my own game by this guy who's toying with me.
Yeah.
And I am like, at that point, my paranoia goes deep. I'm like, how the fuck is this guy sending me a photo of myself while I'm looking for him in the midst of me having this like stressful experience of being basically hacked while I'm trying to hack this guy? And that's when I kind of turned on, like, I'm going into evil mode. Like, I will figure out a way to get you just for the look on your face. So that's what I mean by like kind of the dirty tactics that came in next.
Well, what were the dirty tactics?
I bugged some radio hardware. You know, when it came time to the end of the bounty, it was like, hey, we're gonna have to discuss the rules of engagement. For you revealing the physical location to me, I need some assurances that this is actually your place. That this is the place I'm supposed to be at. That I'm not just like inadvertently testing something that is not something I have the authority to test, right? And that's a very common thing in security engagements, just to make sure everybody's safe.
Yeah.
So at that meeting is when I bugged the guy. And I made sure to wait until the early morning, where I was like, there's a decent chance he went out to party last night.
Yeah.
I'm gonna catch him when he's tired, you know? And bam, got him at his house. And
what does getting him look like?
I bugged him with the tracker.
Right.
So at that point, it's very simple. You know, you're just following him back to his location, hopping his fence, jumping in his pool, hanging out. But I still consider it a cheat. But
why is it a cheat? Because you like?
Yeah, because you had to beat up the guy first. Yeah. You know. There's some other ways you can get around it and reverse engineer like how to find them, but in a short period of time, it's quite difficult.
That's so sick.
Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe, rate the podcast 5 stars, and share with a friend. If you have any questions or comments, DM us at Finding Founders Podcast on Instagram, LinkedIn, or Facebook. Finding Founders is produced and hosted by me, Samuel Donner.
Our audio editing team lead is Ashley Jimenez, with support from
Jessica Morales,
Miley Lipton,
Si Pan,
Kenny Ray,
Josie Yo,
Matt Fernandez,
and Merritt Hill.
Our outreach and research team lead is Desiree Nunez, with support from
Marissa Granados,
Monica Lee,
Sarah Tiersma,
and Yao Liu.
To see more of what we're up to, subscribe to our newsletter at findingfounders.co. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week.